Thanks for downloading this podcast from Love Sport Radio. For more, go to lovesportradio.com for all the latest podcasts, news, and views. Or for more, follow us at Love Sport Radio on Twitter.
You are listening to the Arsenal Fan Show on Love Sport Radio with me, Charlie Hawkins. I am joined in the studio with Gunners Tan, Dave Seagar, Chris Howard and Jim Harriott. Lots for us to be talking about tonight. We're going to be talking, obviously, about the Brighton game last Thursday, the game streamed on Amazon Prime, talking about the big match that is going on tonight, Arsenal taking on West Ham in a massive London derby. Some have billed it as a relegation 6-pointer. It isn't. Chris has already got his hand up. I've only just started my intro.
I just want to know what's happened to your voice. Yeah. What's going on, mate? Are you all right?
I don't know. No idea. I've got a little bit of a cold. Maybe I'm trying to be more manly. Who knows? I can only apologise, Chris. I'll try to get it back in the show. I was trying to impress you. Clearly, it hasn't worked. Just to be amongst you men talking about Arsenal is always a delight. I don't know where I'm going with this. We are talking about the West Ham game at 8 o'clock. It is a massive game. The team news has just come out. We'll get across that in just a second. But we're going to be talking about Freddie, the players. Did they let Emery down? And should you be given a chance, then we will look towards the game on the weekend, the big one. It is City, but the game that really matters is the one tonight. It is West Ham, and the team news, Dave, has just came out.
Yeah, I think it's interesting. I don't think any of us are going to complain at that. If we don't win with this team, or we don't perform well, then we've got questions to be asked. I mean, most of the players who people were thinking getting a little bit fed up with him, he's not performing for the manager, you know, like Luiz, like Lacazette, they're out. Everyone's wanted Aubameyang back in. The only thing I'm intrigued by Sky's formation is they seem to have Martinelli up front and Aubameyang on the left. I really hope that isn't the case. I really hope it's Aubameyang through the middle and Martinelli playing from the left. But I think everyone will be pleased to see Pepe and Martinelli. What do you reckon, boys?
Maybe they've just got an intern in to do the graphics or something.
Well, they've got West Ham as 4-4-2 as well, which I don't think it is. I think they're 4-2-3-1. I think they're matching us.
It is definitely a 4-2-3-1, surely, though. I mean, I can't see any other way in which we would line up. I mean, no. Martinelli, Aubameyang aside.
Yeah, no, definitely.
Makes sense to me.
Yeah, makes sense. There's a lot of changes, though. Dave, you mentioned that there could be a lot of changes tonight. There has been Chambers slots in at centre-half. Bellerin's back. Tierney gets the nod ahead of Kolasinac. Pepe starts, you know, Martinelli starts. Is this, for you, one of the strongest lineups, or the lineup that you wanted to see then? You feel like this is the one that we've been waiting for?
Yeah, but with a couple of exceptions. I mean, certainly the formation, you know, the 4-2-3-1, I think. If we're going to play Ozil, we have to play that formation. You know, if we're going to play Ozil, and we are, we had to play that formation. We've been playing him out wide a bit recently. It's never suited him. It doesn't bring the best out of him. And let's face it, if you can't get the best out of Ozil, then there's no point playing him.
Yeah, absolutely. Chris, me and you last week, we spoke a little bit about Guendouzi. You know, he hasn't been in the greatest run of form. We didn't think that he would be dropped. Certainly wouldn't have been dropped under Unai. He has been dropped for this game. Maybe a little time for him to have a little respite and recovery.
Well, I think it's not just Guendouzi. I think it's also, if you look at Lacazette's last two performances too. So it feels like he's actually gone on a form sort of approach. You know, everyone's been crying out for Martinelli to play on the wings, and he starts tonight.
And Pepe.
People have talked about Pepe, and we looked a lot better when he came on at half-time, I thought. Aubameyang through the centre. It feels like he's actually gone for form players and playing in natural positions. Who'd have thought that?
Yeah, I also think he's gone for some pace on the counter, which I think we've really lacked recently. I mean, I know confidence is a huge part as well, but we've looked quite slow and pedestrian, and I think with Martinelli and Pepe, we've got a bit more speed, and maybe we can you know, make that count. That's, I think, obviously he's not going to, the defence has had its problems for a long, long time, and he's, you know, one way to win it for us is to accentuate the attacking side of it, which looks like he's doing.
Aubameyang
loves it. I mean, if you're going to whip the ball, you know, back across from the byline, we've got two players who can do that, and Aubameyang feeds off that. So is Lacazette, but I think if we're going to play 4-2-3-1, I think everyone's actually said, let's make a bold decision and drop one of the two strikers.
The thing is as well, so West Ham, the impetus is on them, on their home ground, to actually come out a little bit more. So if they're going to push their fullbacks forward, if they're going to play they play a 4-4-1-1 in their previous match, so maybe they are going 4-4-2, but if they push their fullbacks forward, if there's space out wide for rapid wingers, then maybe we can profit from that.
Yeah. Mm. Well, West Ham following suit, they've dropped their record signing, their summer transfer, Sebastian Haller. He is not playing, he's not starting. He's someone that's fallen out of favour in the last couple of games. Dave, we've spoken about Arsenal's lineup tonight. West Ham are in similar run of form themselves, can't get a win. They did beat Chelsea 9 days ago, sort of papered over the cracks somewhat for them. They're on a really poor run of form. What can you expect from West Ham tonight?
Well, I think the big difference for them is having Mikel Antonio back in the side, because he's a bit of a talisman. He just runs all day, and he's a handful to play against. So I'd be worried that he's in the team. Haller, I feel sorry for, because he's obviously a good player. We saw that all last year for Frankfurt. But he's a target man. He's getting up, he's flicking it on, and there's been absolutely nobody in West Ham taking a chance. Well, no one running beyond. There's no one running beyond for his flick-ons and his, you know, hold-up play. So, yeah, this is probably the best they can do. I'm quite relieved that Anderson's not been anywhere near the player he was last season as well. I mean, I'll probably say that and he'll have a great game tonight, but he's definitely been playing below par this season.
No, I know the West Ham fans should agree with you. They've been talking, they've wanted Anderson to be dropped for ages. Jim, it is a massive game tonight. It feels weird to say, oh, it's a huge game. I know loads of jokes have been made, you know, even from Arsenal fans themselves, relegation 6-pointer, it is a London derby. But it is true. How vital is it that Arsenal get this 3 points tonight?
Well, it is massively important, because not just because we haven't won for so long, and actually Freddie Ljungberg, you know, if he's got any designs on the job, then he needs to start pulling some performances out of the hat himself. But our run of results, or the fixtures coming after this, are very, very tricky. So if we don't get anything out tonight, then it's going to look pretty bleak, or at least very tricky for us with the confidence that we clearly don't have. So it's all sorts of things hinge on this, I reckon.
Yeah, absolutely. No wins in 60 days. We have got tougher fixtures on the horizon. Man City on the weekend. But they've been struggling a little bit, if I can say that themselves. Chris, let's talk about the Brighton game then, because obviously we don't have to. We can gloss over it.
Yeah,
we can
on,
pretend it never happened.
Rip that band-aid off.
But Jim just mentioned there that if Freddie has got a desire for the job, you know, it's all about team selection. It's all about results. Not the best selection on Thursday against Brighton. What went wrong for you?
Do you know, the more I think about it and the more that I see tonight's lineup, I just wonder if actually he was trying some form of rotation between the Norwich game and the Brighton game, almost treating it like we've been doing with the Europa League, because we have been rotating Thursday to Sunday. So that's kind of a bit speculative, but I just wonder, because this team feels like the right sort of balance to it. And you almost think, well, why wouldn't you do that at home to Brighton? You know, he had the opportunity there to do that, and he picked a very Unai Emery looking side.
I think,
and we got an Unai Emery looking result.
I think there was a degree of, obviously he has players that he feels very attached to and feels he trusts, and Willock is one of those players. And I think he wanted to trust Willock, and it hasn't worked.
Mm. And no place on the bench, Dave, either.
Well,
tonight,
he's made some comments about, he's tried to go with what he thought and what, you know, to a degree of continuity, but he's also made, we need to go with experience now. We're now in a situation where experience counts. So he's obviously decided that there are not many, well, there are no youngsters really. I mean, I suppose you can call Tierney a youngster, but it's
Martinelli.
Martinelli's been, he's risen to every challenge that's been placed in front of him. So
yeah,
I think these kind of
also
games,
he's not in a defensive or a midfield role. He's a bit, you know.
These kind of games are really tricky for young players, because if you're in a team that's winning, that's doing well and performing, then it's a great time to blood players. But when you're really struggling, they're already struggling, the kind of experienced ones too, then, you know, it's tough, really tough. So it's not such a bad thing to take them out of the firing line.
I think the problem for Willock was he was taken out of the firing line when he was playing well at the beginning of the season. The team were playing better, then he was taken out. You know, the first two or three games he played central midfield, he played at 10 in Newcastle, Burnley, played well in both games, probably one of our better players, and then he was rested for a while. I think if he was going to carry on in the team, maybe it might have been a different story. But to be taken in and out when you're a young player and starting games as well, rather than coming off the bench, it's tough.
We've done this for years, though, haven't we? Like, so many times there's instances, and I think Iwobi is an example of it. A player comes in, I mean, this isn't this case with Willock, but a player comes in, gets overplayed, the confidence just gets shot through the floor, and then they're going to end up getting chewed up and spat out. I don't know.
Let's talk about that, because you mentioned the selection might have been wrong, the substitutions people weren't happy with on Thursday night. But Freddie Ljungberg come out afterwards, Dave, and said the confidence at the minute is absolutely on the floor. What can we expect? We can't expect performances when at the minute we just need to get the confidence back. How do we go about doing this, Dave?
I think the other thing he said is, which I hadn't really picked up on, and I'm sure most fans hadn't, was obviously because after Unai disappeared, he gave him 2 days off and he went off to Spain. So the team hadn't trained, and Ljungberg's actually had two full training sessions, because he said that he's only had one training session, because after Thursday they didn't obviously train Friday, Saturday, and he's only had them, you know, so he's, I think, Sunday training or today. So all his confidence building has been done verbally. He's not actually been able to do any work on the training ground or enough work. So maybe if we get a result tonight and then he's got a proper run up until the weekend where he's getting and having training three or four, you know, sessions, maybe we'll see a difference.
I think there's something in that. Can I just chuck the Duncan Ferguson elephant in the room in that he had no training whatsoever with his Everton players at the weekend and they turned around an absolute blinding result.
So. Oh, he's trained with them every day, though.
I mean, so he's
been the first.
Well, yeah, I guess.
Well. That's why they gave him the job on the interim basis, because he's been in and around the players, all this training. I understand what you mean. They go, well, he's been there, you know, he was Unai's number two this season, he's been on the training pitch.
That was a complete, he played dogs of war formation, he played 4-4-2, you know, we haven't done that, we haven't put in two banks of discipline four and played like Everton. You're lucky if you see five or six tackles in a game in the Premier League. Do you know how many, you know, but that was 37 tackles made by Everton players. That's a record in the Premier League over the last 10 years.
They were
dogs of war. Arsenal never play like that. You can't change that in
a couple
of days.
No, I think some of our problems go back so long. I mean, I know Everton's do to a degree as well, but our problems go back such a long way that I think, you know, I know we're an impatient bunch and God knows we are, but they go back such a long way, our problems, that I think, you know, to ask him to fix them in this short period of time, in two games, it's you know, we just need to, you know, give him a little bit of time.
Yeah, and Lundberg's been the first team coach this season. Duncan Ferguson's been there about since 2011, I think, on the staff. I mean, it's not, you know. He's been in and around that team a long time, and they all love him, obviously.
They do all love him. Jim, you mentioned, you know, we need to have a little bit of patience. Obviously, fans are so fickle, you know, in all sports and all teams. But straight after those two games, people are like, Lundberg, you know, he hasn't got the makings. Why do some fans, even if it is a small minority, say, Lundberg's not the man, he's not the man, when it has been two games?
Because that's the way it works, isn't it? And we've all got platforms that we can say what we think, and that's fine. You know, that's the way it is. But I think if you... You know, that would be one extreme end of the spectrum of what people think. And I think on the other end, you might get people to say, I'll give him till the end of the season. I think the rump of Arsenal fans realise that it's a tricky job. Give him, you know, a decent wedge of time. And I think, and he should, I don't necessarily think he's going to get the job. Don't get me wrong. But I don't think you can even say anything against him, particularly after just two games. He's finding his feet. He's trying a few things out, like Chris said. Mm. Maybe it didn't quite work. Maybe he's realised that now. The lineup looks good tonight. And so, you know, it's just his third game.
From you three, then, would you like him to get to the end of the season, or would you want a fixed, permanent appointment sooner rather than later?
Do you know, I almost don't really care who the human being is in charge. I just want to see a certain type of football and belief to be reinstalled back into the players. So if that happens with Ljungberg, great. If that happens with Vieira, great. If that means they have to get Ancelotti, I'm not really that wedded to individuals. I know I said last week I'd love to see Nagelsmann, but that's just more because I've seen briefly his style of play. I quite like it. So I think, actually, if you could translate that to Arsenal, then happy days. So for me, I think it's more about, can he actually get the players playing into a system that we can all, as fans, and you've talked about this, Dave, lots this season, start to actually enjoy going to watch Arsenal again, because I haven't enjoyed it for a long time.
There's different types of fans. I mean, I think we're all fans of a certain age, me more of a certain age than these two, but there are younger fans.
I've heard all night, that, isn't
there,
it?
There are younger fans who are, I hate to use the word entitled, but we are a big club. We deserve better. We deserve a top manager. And they're not dealing with the reality of the situation right now.
Wrong, though?
They're not wrong to want it, but they're wrong to believe it's a certainty. Because we are a big club, and a lot of managers will want to manage in London. But right now, it's a big ask for someone to come and turn this around in the short term. So it's not going to be an easy negotiation. It's not like Tottenham. I hate to say it, who were in the Champions League final a few months ago and have obviously got a core of good playing staff. You know, they went on a poor run. But this is a basket case that's been going on for years, since long before even Wenger left. It's not a quick fix for someone. So it's not going to be a quick managerial change. I think it is going to be a period of time till we find the right person and the right person who's willing to take the job.
Yeah, I think Dave's absolutely right. But how much patience and time are fans willing to give? We're going to be having a discussion in the new coach and seeing how much, if the board, are they looking to work on the cheap.
Love Sport.
You are listening to the Arsenal Fan Show and Love Sport Radio with me, Charlie Hawkins, joining the studio with Gunners Tan, Dave Seager, Chris Howard and Jim Harriott. We were just having a discussion about who the new man could be, who we may want. Well, let's have a discussion now on the coach, because obviously we're hearing that maybe the Ball don't have as much money as fans believe they have, Chris.
Yeah, first of all, good evening. Good evening. I mean, we were talking about the Swiss Ramble accounts, or what the, he does a very good analysis of financially the state that Arsenal are in. And I use the word state with definite double meaning there. And because we're in such free fall, as you were saying, if we don't even get Europa League football, it could look very, very dire. And what's more depressing is the thought process that we haven't got an ownership that will say, well, we've got to speculate to accumulate here. They will just say, No, we'll, you know, you're self-funding, we're not going to put any money in. And if we drop out of the Europa League, then it feels like there would need to be some kind of an external injection to get Arsenal going back in the right direction.
Well, you say that, but then look at Leicester when they had no European football. Mm. Look at Chelsea when they had no European football.
Would Arsenal benefit from a year out, Dave? Not obviously financially.
If we have the confidence in our youth that I think we should have, then it's possible.
If we can keep
the core of the good experienced players, or in some cases make them stay maybe, and blend it with the youth, then it could be quite exciting. But no one wants that, obviously. I mean,
I think what you do, what every big club every club that hasn't got a sugar daddy does, is that you cut your cloth accordingly, and you sell one or two of your players. And you know, if that means moving on to Aubameyang for 70 million in the summer, then that's what you've got to do. Mm. And that's the way you balance the book. So I'm not saying, I wouldn't particularly want an owner who just piles billions in, because that's got its own problems too. And you know, clubs like Liverpool and Spurs, they don't do it that way. And it's more about good management and good husbandry. And that's what I think, you know, it's much more important.
Which we haven't really had much of, which is one of the biggest issues at the moment, isn't it, really?
Well, that is one of the big problems. And also, you have to remember financial fair play. But how much, obviously, are the board playing their part in this as well, Chris?
The board, as in Raul and Edu. I think Edu
None
seems
of them
to
are
be...
on the board, are they?
Well,
just
yeah,
the management
the
team.
Board doesn't even
That's
seem to exist,
problem.
Does it? It's Josh
the
and
front
Stan
office,
and...
yeah, the team.
Yeah, so the football team. I think a lot of people seem to be labelling Edu with the same... They're tarring Edu with this same brush that Raul... Like, there seems to have been a turning of sentiment away from Sanyehi over the last few weeks, as Unai Emery hasn't been sacked, which I can understand and I agree with. But people have also been lumping it. I've seen people lump Edu in with this, and I'm a bit like, well, hold on a second. He's only been here 5 minutes. He's had no chance to impact, really, you know, his approach, his
Well, if he got us Martinelli, he's done a good job so far.
Well, yeah, so I think, yeah. is this on Raul? Possibly. I mean, he was a bit, you know, everyone loved him in the summer, but all of a sudden he's been a little bit hesitant to pull the trigger on a manager that was clearly failing. That's, personally, I think that's the only thing that he's really done wrong.
Well, I think
so
the revelations
far.
From the Emery camp today have been interesting, though, haven't they?
I haven't seen that.
Oh, he basically said that he wanted Saha and Raul okay. went and got Pepe. He wanted Partey and they signed whoever they signed, Ceballos. And no one he wanted, he got, basically. He didn't want Luis.
Is that sour grapes, he wanted, Dave? Or is that true? What do you think? Well, just your own personal opinion. No one will know, obviously.
I think it's a degree of sour grapes in him trying to sort of distance himself from the failure so he can get another job, probably.
But all men want to leave some kind of a legacy behind them, don't they? And I think that's him trying to leave a little bit of a legacy. Yeah, it's, you know, he didn't get those. I think what you're saying about blaming Raul and Edu, it is true, but everyone's been sort of trying to point a Gatling gun and blame at people, and that's because we're doing badly, and you know, it's really hard to know whether how culpable they are, but what they probably could do a bit better, certainly with Edu, is actually a little bit better communication what he's doing, because you know, we can't assume he's doing a bad job at all. We just don't really know what
he's
doing.
Well, if he's director of football, he probably shouldn't necessarily be involved in any decisions on the managers. He should be involved in scouting and decisions on players, shouldn't he? And start and playing style.
Yeah, I'm not.
Whereas Raul should be doing the scouting for managers and coaches.
I'm not 100% sure. I'm sure there's been some interviews describing what Edu does, but I'm just, again, it goes back to
the press today. Have been, really the reason the Twitter and social media have turned a little bit in Edu is because the press are saying it's Edu's been, you know, he's pushing for his mate Patrick Vieira to get the job, and that's why, oh, we don't want that, yeah. Just because he's his mate.
Dave, what if Unai was telling the truth and he really wanted Zaha and he didn't want Pepe? Because before, in the summer, we're hearing Unai really wants Zaha.
Well,
he's the number one target.
In May.
Yeah, he's the number
one.
And now we say, oh, you know, it's a bit of sour grapes. What if Unai is telling the truth and maybe, you know, this is part of the problem that we bring in someone and they're not signing the players that he wants for the identity of his team?
Obviously, Zaha had a lot going in that he would hit the ground running. No question. He's an Arsenal fan. He's proven in the Premier League. He's much stronger physically than Pepe, with a similar, you know, position on the pitch. I think the thing was the club is, because they've been slighted and damaged by previous bad management, they're just desperate to bring in younger players with a bigger sell-on value. That's the difference. Pepe's, what, 22 or 21 or whatever, and Saha's 26, 27. Yeah. And they're just thinking, similar sort of players, same money, one's got a great sell-on value, one hasn't. So you can sympathise with the decision-making, but Emery, obviously his challenge is to produce on the pitch. So you've got different objectives there, haven't you?
I think what they did is they said, all right, Unai, here's your window, January 2019, what are you going to do? Denis Suarez. And they said, no, that's it, you've had your chance, you don't get any more say in any signings.
I forgot about him.
Yeah. I think, well, yeah, it could almost be that kind of whole, you should have got Zaha thing. It's a little bit of a red herring, because would Emery have done any better with Zaha? I mean, the rest of the team is not and was not functioning. So maybe Zaha would have struggled in the same way that, maybe not quite as much, but you know, I'm not saying he would have. He could hardly have lifted the whole team up and fixed it all himself. I think that would have been unrealistic.
But I think the question is, it is tricky if the manager doesn't sign the players, because Rodgers said that Arsenal were after Tierney since late 2015, 2016. So it's another one that Unai, it's not like Unai coming and went, we must get Kieran Tierney. You know, yeah. These are signings that were fought a long way before that.
But that's kind of, isn't that kind of the structure that Arsenal have been trying to build, which is this idea that the coaching stuff, that the coach is a bit more interchangeable. It's almost a bit like this Barcelona type approach. You know, not that we have the same success, but that's.
But maybe that's the approach that's not working.
Well, that was why people. I was quite relaxed when we were linked to Jurgen Klopp, because we always never managed to. No, we're not. That's not the structure now. We're bringing a coach in. Mm. Everyone else is dealing with which players and everything. He just has to coach, and so yeah, you're right. That is exactly what. It's supposed to be the case.
It is supposed to be, but at the minute, everyone, you know, even Gary Neville on Sky Sports said the problem at Arsenal has been the recruitment, you can't get the players to perform when the recruitment's not been good enough.
I don't think this squad's
as bad as it's been
as
made
bad
out.
As it's been made out.
Yeah,
I think the attitude's quite bad. I don't think the ability's that bad.
No, that's
I think the problem's been twofold. It's been changing formation and tactics all the time and picking players in wrong positions.
And a lack of communication.
But I just think, we've said this every week on this show, nobody knows what he's trying to do. Mm. You know, and at the moment, nobody knows what Freddie's trying to do. Maybe we'll find out tonight. But I the whole thing about the big, it's got to be a big manager, it's got to be a big name, you've got to go out and break the bank. You know, I'm with Jim on that. I just don't think we know. You know, I tell you, sir, something. I don't think there's a single player in that squad who would stand up to Patrick Vieira on the training pitch. I don't care how successful he's been at Nice. You know, I have no issue if it's Patrick Vieira. And I'm not
really.
I'm not
okay.
I'm just not going to judge it. You know, he's going to give the fans a lift. You know, he's had a degree of success. He's managed at two clubs. He's not like Arteta. And if that's the budget we've got, then that's the budget we've got. I just don't think players would have the same. I don't think they'd be able to bully Patrick Vieira, put it that way.
Do you know who he strikes me like? You know, when you're at school and you've got that teacher that is just really, normally like a Welsh PE teacher who's really, really quiet, and they're so quiet, it's scary.
Public school.
Like, scary quiet. That's what Patrick Vieira sounds like to me. He's like so quiet and softly spoken that you.
I would love to know what he's like on the training ground.
Yeah.
Because, yeah, we all saw. He's not
softly spoken, is he, on the training ground, I would imagine?
Well, he was softly spoken off it, and then he'd get on the pitch and he'd be like, you know, a switch had been pressed, but yeah, I'd love to know what his whether he kind of commands respect in the same way that, or fear in the same way that someone like George Graham did, or whether it's a bit more collegiate like Arsene Wenger.
Well, like, it'd be hard not to get excited with a dugout that included Freddie, Gilberto Pires, and Patrick Vieira, wouldn't it?
Yeah,
it'd be hard not to be excited for at least a few weeks.
Yeah, for a bit of Arsenal romance, but you know, we want the longer vision in that. I know you wouldn't mind if it was Patrick Vieira. Obviously, Chris said who he would like last week. Who would you like if you could have anyone, Dave? If there
honestly,
is such a name,
honestly,
out there.
I have no idea.
No, genuinely,
I really don't, because I have this complete phobia of bringing managers who've been successful elsewhere and expecting them to be successful. I just don't think there's a magic formula here. I talked about Koeman as a really good example. I mean, I wanted Koeman when he left Southampton. Mm. I think most Arsenal fans would have taken Koeman. He went to Everton and as an unmitigated disaster, then went to Holland. He's now doing so well that Barcelona want him as their next coach. England fans, English Premier League fans, oh, Koeman, disaster, rubbish manager. You just don't know. I mean, Benitez, no interest for me. Ancelotti, too old. A lot of the names, Nagelsmann, I can take that. He's too old,
Ancelotti, really?
Yeah, you do want to be his training methods at Bayern Munich. The players wouldn't even get out on the training pitch. He was so boring and antiquated in his training methods. I don't want that.
I'm a bit like Dave. I veer from one thing to the other. Part of me thinks, oh, it would be great to get someone fresh like Arteta in because it's new ideas. And the other part of me thinks, this squad is very hard to manage, lots of big egos.
Yeah.
And I think someone like Simeone could come in and really kick him up the arse, and Frank, you know, maybe that's what they need. But then I changed my mind again the next day. So
Well, if you were going to do that, maybe a Simeone. But I think the stipulation has to be here that Freddie stays. If it isn't Freddie, because we have this thing in football where everybody brings their team with them, and that was the problem. Apparently, that's why they wouldn't take Arteta on, because he didn't have a team to bring with him. He didn't have a coaching staff. You know, they wanted him, but he didn't have an entourage. Well, maybe it is time to say, look, you know, bring someone in, but you keep. Chelsea did it for years. Ray Wilkins and Clark had all the same coaches there. The manager's changed. It doesn't have to be that way. So why not say Freddie's staying as first team coach? He's going to learn under someone experienced. Maybe do it that way.
That's where Arteta works, because if he still hasn't got a team, then, well, we already got a team, and actually it's ex-players like you, and you've all got the same kind of background. So
it's also a hell of a lot cheaper to sack him.
Yeah.
When you haven't got six staff also on pretty good wages. I mean, yeah. I think, your severance package goes from some millions to a significant number of millions.
I think that's what happened when Benitez left Liverpool, because everybody from the first team down to the under-11s coach in the academy, he brought in everyone all the way down. Sacked Steve Highway and all the Liverpool players, everyone went. So the whole of the academy was Spanish.
Is there a worry that obviously Freddie has an extended run as first team manager, and he really wants the job, and he doesn't get it, and he feels like, this is what I want to do, that he then says, I don't want to stay on and go back to being a number two when I've been number one for X amount of time?
Well, it depends what the deal is. If the deal is we're bringing in a senior manager who's got an 18-month contract and you're learning from him, then I'm sure he'd be very happy with that. He's very obviously happy to learn. He left a good position at Arsenal to follow Wim Jonkers to go and be assistant manager at Wolfsburg. He was happy to leave Arsenal to go and get experience in the Bundesliga. So I think he's an ambitious guy.
I think he's got to be realistic as well, hasn't he?
If he is ambitious and he gets another chance to be a first team manager somewhere else after experiencing having that first taste, will he want to go back to being number two?
Well, maybe, because he wouldn't have expected to get a job like that, not this early. I think it came by kind of happenstance rather than a clear sort of trajectory. So, I suspect that he would be happy to do it for a bit longer. But yeah, you're right. I mean, in the end, he's going to want a job like that where that is. If it's not at Arsenal, well, we don't really know, do we?
Yeah, he's going to want the experience sooner rather than later. What do you think? Tweet us at Love Sport Radio or call us 0208 70 20 558. Let us know who you think Arsenal's man should be. Love Sport. You are listening to the Arsenal Fan Show on Love Sport Radio with me, Charlie Hawkins. I'm joined in the studio with Gunners Tan, Dave Seager, Chris Howard and Jim Harriott. We were just talking about Arsenal losing to Brighton and the new manager, discussion of a new coach. Which way will Arsenal go? Well, there has been a little bit of news, Dave, and we may get a name, possibly, maybe. We never know with rumours, but we could get one sooner, much sooner than expected.
Yeah, no, I was just reading that Guillaume Balague said that Marcelino's certainly in London to talk to perhaps representatives from Everton and Arsenal. He does feel, however, that Arsenal's preferred route is to go for a former player, and he expects both clubs to make announcements this week.
So
this week is, well, before Man
Monday,
City.
Tuesday, Wednesday, yeah. Thursday, Friday.
No, I'm thinking before a big game is what I'm thinking, Chris. You know, it's a big game, isn't it?
It is a big game, and it's weird that they would maybe make that change before that game. Dave, I knew what you meant. Don't worry about it.
He's just getting his own back.
Yeah, he gets like that at times, Chris. We have to talk, though, because so it's sort of, you know, maybe not Freddie, they know whatever way this goes with Freddie, you know, he isn't the man, you know, even if he does win tonight and he goes on this run, they are looking at permanent options, and maybe he's not in the running, or maybe he is that former player.
Well, yeah, that technically is a thing, isn't it? Do you know what's interesting? I wonder what would have happened, it's hindsight and I guess irrelevant, but if he'd have got two wins out of two, would it all be completely different now? Would people be clamouring for him to take the job full time? Would they still be making a decision this week? Doubtful.
I think, yeah, because that Brighton game at home, and we didn't get that so-called new manager bounce, and they wasn't lifted, and it was very much an Unai performance. I just had the slightest feeling that even if we do go on this run, we beat West Ham, we get something against City, I just thought Freddie won't get the job now because of that start and that Brighton game. Just on that, I know that's ridiculous, two games.
What really surprised me was I was really looking forward to the Brighton game. I was expecting, you know, 57,000 people singing Freddie's name from about half hour before kickoff.
Yeah.
It just didn't happen. I was really anticipating.
Because you guys were there. How many people were actually there in the stadium?
I'd say it was over, it was late 40s, early 50s. It was pretty full.
I'd say it was more than that. I'd say the upper tier had a few sort of spotted bits where there wasn't anyone there, but which I found it a bit odd as well. But
it was, I mean, even the Norwich, you had a good round of, you know, we love you, Freddie. There was nothing in that.
Why was that, though, Dave?
I really don't get it.
I don't know either. Maybe it was a Thursday night. I don't really know. But yeah, it was a bit odd. Maybe. It's that sort of run up to Christmas thing. I expected a bit more.
Is this just because, you know, a bigger indictment of, you know, a lot of fans like yourself, you're not looking forward to it anymore, even if it is Freddie falling out of love, and something more drastic, bigger needs to happen than just, you know, a brilliant former player coming in at the helm?
And is it just because it's an interim appointment as well, and so everyone's like, it's not the actual new manager, so he could be gone within a week or not running the team?
I think so much of it is really down to performances, and I think had we won the Norwich game, and then, you know, it is, I think people are a bit flat and a bit browbeaten because it's been quite bad for quite a long time, and like you said earlier on, it's been quite dull to watch for a long time, certainly back in the last season and all of this season. It's not been exciting football, and I think it's all sort of cumulative in that respect.
Yeah, I think I was on a guest on one of the other shows this week, and I likened it to the early 80s when you had a collective of very, very good players. You know, you had top internationals like Woodcock and Mariner and Sampson and Viv Anderson and, you know, Brian Talbot, Peter Nicholas. These were all international footballers, and yet we weren't a team. You know, we just weren't a team. And that's what this feels like. I mean, with no disrespect to Norwich, they've got some great young players, and Brighton playing very, very. Both teams are teams playing as teams, beating 11 players who aren't playing as a team. That's as simple as that.
Yeah.
Well, and that's the job of the coach. And that's why it's so important.
Brighton, 17 games against the top six. They have 4 points, one win against Arsenal, one draw against Arsenal in those 17 games against the top six.
One cost us Europe and one might cost us relegation.
Yeah, playing as a team against someone that's not a team. Chris, we mentioned about, you know, chances of top four, gave you that stat, that percentage ages ago. I think it's come down quite
it's
a way.
It's probably 0.04
It's
now,
come down
it?
Somewhat since then. But after the game and in the lead up to this game of West Ham tonight, Freddie said we still have a good chance of making the top four.
Yeah, if we win every single one of our next games, then I'm sure we've got a shout.
Well, you say that, but then, you know, Chelsea lost two out of the last three. Spurs lost one against Man United. You know, Man United have put 1-2 back to back. Before that, they lost three. There's no one. The Wolves are the team that are putting a run together. You know, really.
11 games unbeaten.
That's their best record since winning the league in the 50s. Now, that's unbelievable. They are. That's the manager that suddenly, you know, he ruled himself out, didn't he? I think that would have been an exciting appointment. Nuno Espirito Santos. I was genuinely quite excited by that. I think that would be a good
the links,
but
yeah.
Going back to what we were saying about the former player from Balagay, I was just trying to look up and I can't find it quickly, but I don't know who Patrick Vieira's staff are at Nice, because he played with Freddie from 1998 through till 2005, so they're obviously good friends, one would assume, and if Freddie's already there and Vieira is the name that they're looking for as a former player, then maybe that's what they're looking at.
It does excite me. If
you can't help it a little bit.
You can't.
Imagine if they made, I've just thought, we play Man City the weekend. Imagine if they actually made an appointment this week and it is Arteta.
Or Vieira.
Going Rice up against his old team.
What size Vieira?
Yeah.
Vieira would be going up against his old team as well if he came to Arsenal.
Oh, yeah, true.
It'd be a tricky one though, wouldn't it, in a way? If you hire Arteta in, at the expense of Freddie, obviously. Neither of them have ever managed or had ever managed a football game.
Yeah.
Arteta, his star appears to be on the rise, purely because he's sat next to Pep for 3 years. But he's got no experience. And, you know, I'm not sure that how Freddie would take that. If
that's
Arteta
what I mean.
Came.
Would he be slighted by that?
I think he'd probably... Yeah, maybe not slighted. I think he'd be a bit miffed, though, wouldn't he? I mean,
of course he would.
Because if someone's coming in who's clearly more experienced than you and has a better track record, you'd hold your hands up and say, well, fair enough, I've only just come into this game, but I'm not so sure.
Perhaps everyone's going to be surprised, and the former Arsenal player who's at Man City who's coming to Arsenal is Brian Kidd.
Maybe. You never know.
I can imagine.
You just never know. Nigel Winterburn.
He's not a Man City, is he?
No, I was just saying, former player, it could be anyone. We literally never know who it's going to be. It is interesting, but if that's rumour is to be believed, Chris, because we just never know, because there's been numerous rumours over the last 10 days since Unai left.
Yeah. It gets a bit tiresome, doesn't it, really? I mean, it's like I said earlier, I'm not... The names, they're just names. We need to get players' confidence. We need to get
more fun. What did we talk about for 22 years when we never had this?
Exactly. Yes, exactly. We're now so confused and bamboozled by it all after basically 18 months of this. And we had 22 years and not having to worry about it.
No, we still talked about the managers we should have appointed while we kept hold of Wenger.
Well, yeah, that's true.
Yeah, quite true. Well, we're going to be looking more at that West Ham game next. Obviously, he's kicking off in 20 minutes. Arsenal, whoever the new man is, it's Freddie tonight, needing a big 3 points in the London derby. Love Sport. You're listening to the Arsenal Fan Show and Love Sport Radio with me, Charlie Hawkins. I'm joined in the studio with Gunners Tan, Dave Seager, Chris Howard and Jim Harriet. And there is still time to get in touch tonight and have your say. Get involved in tonight's show. Tweet us at Love Sport Radio or call us 0208 7020 558. Well, we spoke about a potential new man coming in, maybe as soon as this week. But let's talk about the players, because, you know, the players, their attitude in the last few games. This is another thing. Did they let Unai down to a certain degree, Dave?
Well, I didn't really... I'd had a few beers before the game against Brighton, to be fair.
No.
And I didn't really pick up on this whole Aubameyang going off the pitch for a period of time and having a... And also, both Lacazette and Guendouzi walked off with each course, which is what Xhaka got booed for. And it was all a bit of a blur to me. So, Jim, were you sober at the match?
Well, half. Yeah, no, I was. the players, I think the players always have to take a certain degree of responsibility. I mean, it would be, otherwise you're just hiding behind the manager. I mean, it may well be true that they didn't understand quite what he was asking, and I think we can probably say that that's true. But at the same time, yeah, some of the performances over the season haven't been good enough, and these are professionals at the top of their game who've been winning matches and trophies in many respects all the way through their career, and they should have the gumption to maybe not make huge changes, but they shouldn't let their heads go down in the way that some of them have.
Yeah, there's been poor performances. I think there's been some square pegs chucked in round holes as well. Like we were just talking off air about Torreira playing as a high pressing central midfielder, which we saw him at his best last season, about this time last season, where he was, you know, deep block, you know, defensive cover in front of the back four, which doesn't seem to exist at the moment. So I think there's a mixture of players being misused, but then also the confidence in that team just being through the floor. And then there's not the character of individuals to drag some of the others forward. I think that's probably an issue. We don't have a talismanic figure to say, come on, let's do this. And those players that are supposed to be that, the Ozils, because, well, you know, when you're paying a player that much money, you should get that. Or the Aubameyangs, all right, he's got some goals, but is he as talismanic? We don't have that.
We're missing a leader.
I don't want to be like cliched and like every single sports pundit in the world saying Arsenal don't have leaders.
Yeah. But if there's an element of truth in it, that we are missing that figure, Jim.
I'm not so sure, because like we back in 94, or 95, in the sort of fag end of George Graham's tenure, we had more leaders than we could shake a stick at, and we still weren't very good. So I do think the players, you know, deserve to take some responsibility. But at the same time, you know, humans are humans, and humans are, you know, they have moods up and down, and collectively, as we all do. And I think it's unrealistic to expect them to be any different to us. So, you know, I think they could have done more. But at the same time, sometimes, you know, there are bigger things at play in terms of the general mood of the place. And I think it's not an easy place to be at the moment.
I do think also the revelation this week that Tierney's not been sort of rested because anything other than he's had other injuries that we didn't know about. I mean, it wasn't just his ankle, he's had shoulder problems, so he hasn't been able to play as full a part as we wanted. And obviously the same's been said of Bellerin. So they're both, I think we all thought the team would look very different when those two were fully fit and firing. And as now we probably know that we actually haven't seen either of them fully fit and firing yet.
Bellerin's
struggling, you know. He's still a great player, don't get me wrong. But if he's not fully fit and Tierney's not fully fit, then that's a problem for us. And if they're both playing tonight and they're past fully fit, let's see, because it could make quite a difference.
Well, they are both playing tonight. Let's preview that game slightly more, because we did obviously talk about the lineups when they were announced earlier. But how do we think this game is going to go? Where do we think this game is going to be won and lost, Chris?
Well, sorry to interrupt. I've just seen someone just tweet that apparently Bellerin was injured in the warm-up, and so Ainsley Maitland-Niles is replacing him in the starting 11 for tonight.
Well,
so,
Dave, there you go.
Kiss of death for me there.
But he's not fit this year. You know, we're waiting for that to be confirmed. As have Sky changed it up there, we're not so sure. But yeah, it looks like they have. But we just can't get, you know, the two first choice wing backs to start, Dave.
Well, I'm quite glad it's happened tonight. If I'm glad it's happened at all, because it's happened with Chambers being picked at centre back. So otherwise, if that was Louise, we again would have had Chambers at right back. Louise would have still been in the team. He's had his hand forced, so at least he's not taking Chambers out of where I think he should be playing, and I think his form has deserved him to have a shot. You know, I think he's deserved to be playing centre-back for quite some time. When he was playing right-back, there were a couple of games where actually I thought, you know, he's out of position, but I think he's probably been one of our most consistent players. So he's deserved a shot at centre-back, and he's there. So Maitland-Niles comes in at right-back, and Maitland-Niles is far from a disaster at right-back. It's not his position. I don't know what his ultimate position is going to be, but it's not a disaster.
I think I'm saying small one. Sorry, go on, Jim.
Oh, sorry, yeah. I was going to say, I totally agree with you. I think he struggled a bit at right-back, but then who hasn't struggled in this side this season? I think he's had a bit of a rough ride in terms of people assuming that he's absolutely terrible. He did say it wasn't really his position, and some people kind of went on his back for that, saying, oh, well. Mm. But I think he's done all right, and I think he's very athletic. I think I've got no problems with him coming in at right back, to be honest.
No, nor have I.
I'm a big Chambers fan. I probably am in the minority, but I want him to get a chance to start as holding midfielder. I really believe that's his best position. That's where I want him to
be
given
a chance to start with holding.
Yeah, well, it's another one we can't keep.
Well, just somebody to be in that space in front of our back four, because like watching it on TV last Thursday was genuinely depressing to see. The amount of times where Brighton would pick the ball up in their defensive third and within two passes through the middle of the pitch be bearing down on our back four. It
but
was
we're
like
so much
bizarre,
better with Shaka in there. Everyone tells me.
Yeah, but this is what I'm saying. So Torreira wasn't playing as a defensive midfielder. And so we had this, you know, Uruguayan sort of terrier who's playing further up the pitch, and then you've got Xhaka who's supposed to cover all of that ground, and it was just ridiculous. Well, whether that's a Torreira, whether that's a Chambers in defensive
or
David Luiz, it doesn't matter. Just let's put somebody in there to cover that space.
It's interesting. Sorry, Dave,
but I think if David Luiz were there, he wouldn't, or Chambers, they wouldn't start venturing up the pitch. Whereas Torreira, I know it's his position, I know we want him there, but this is the guy who scored the fourth goal against Tottenham in the North London derby. He always forayed up the pitch, but he just got back, you know, and into his position. But I think Luiz, the way we are now, Luiz or Chambers would stay there.
If you look at take it centre back, like, it's a really, really interesting time for the players we've got, because, you know, normally in a kind of highly functioning side, you've got a backup centre half who'll wait for a couple of seasons to get
Andy Lilligan
his sniff. Yeah, exactly. And suddenly you've got the situation now where if I was Chambers and Holding, you'd think, oh, I am in with such a good. If I get this right, I'm in such a good chance now, because the three other people that are nominally ahead of me in terms of experience are not performing well. And, you know, they have Holding is injured, so it's a problem for him. But with someone like Chambers, it's actually the kind of chaos at Arsenal. He's probably having a great season. He probably doesn't mind.
I think Mavropanos is probably wondering what the hell he has to do.
Yeah, well, I don't know what happened there either.
Well, Maitland-Niles comes back in. It's his first start since September, Dave. Obviously, he came out after and said he doesn't want to play at right back, and he goes straight back into that position tonight.
Well, you say that, but he also said, you know, Bellerin's got a fight on his hands when he's fit at the end of last season. Mm. So, you know. But then that's when he was playing wing back, I suppose, when we had three at the back. I don't think he likes playing in a flat back four.
The thing is, he hasn't been playing at all. Yeah. So he's probably now thinking, do you know what? I quite happily take right back right now, because he's had, a month, five weeks out of the first team. He's played Europa League, but...
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I don't know if this changes it now. Obviously, maybe not the overall result for you, but how do you see this one playing out tonight, Dave?
Well, I think, as we'd always say, with a team low on confidence, whether it's us or West Ham, the first goal in this game is going to be absolutely critical. And if Arsenal get it, then I think we've got better players and it's the right formation. I think this is a massive game for Mesut Ozil. I think it's a massive game for Mesut Ozil, because there's no excuses now. He's got two wingers flying either side of him, and he's got a flying striker. He's got so much pace, as Jim said earlier. So if they're running, if they're making the runs... This is his element. This is where he should be stepping up and saying, I'm still Mesut Ozil. I can still deliver a pass into space to find the timing of the run. that's what he did for so many years. He hasn't done it for 2 or 3 years. This is his chance. There's no excuses. He's got three speedsters working around him tonight.
Yeah, no excuses. He has to shine tonight. Jim, how do you see this one playing out?
Well, I won't lie. Like, I really didn't expect us to get anything out of tonight earlier on today, but with every passing minute,
you got all excited.
Oh, look at me! What a mug! it's happened again. But no,
we always know.
It's happened again.
Exactly. So I look at it now. I look at the lineup and think, oh, do you know what? I reckon
Ainsley's in. Yeah,
that's football in the
7-6. We're going to win it 7-6.
Football
tonight.
In the microcosm, isn't it? Yeah. So
there's always the next game.
So Arsenal 5-0.
The short answer is we could win, lose, or draw. No, I don't know. I'm looking forward to it now, I must say.
Yeah, Chris, what about yourself?
7-6. Let's do it. Let's just go basketball. Because let's face it, we can't defend. So you've got someone with an engine like Ainsley Maitland-Niles right back. I think Tierney's better going forward than he is going back. Let's literally just flood West Ham. And
thank goodness they haven't got Super Jack on the bench.
Yeah. What West Ham are we expecting then? Because obviously the one that they've been in the last 7-8 games has been horrific. But then they found themselves really up for it against Chelsea at Stamford Bridge,
Dave. Well, as I've said on a few occasions, certainly on the fans forum show on Sundays, I'm still waiting to see which is the real Declan Rice. Is he as good as everyone has said he is? Because if he is, he should be at Arsenal in January, if he's that good. Honestly, the player we need is one of the best defensive midfielders. I'm just not convinced yet. But when I saw him play for England recently, he looked like back to the player that was playing that role at the beginning of last season. He's got 10 years ahead of him at a top club. It isn't going to be West Ham. I'm sorry, West Ham fans, if you're listening, but that's what we need. So that's the one I'm interested in. Because now he's got Noble back alongside him, suddenly that's a solid pivot, isn't it?
They were poor against Tottenham, but he was. To me, I watched that game well. I watched part of it, and as soon as it was Tottenham going that 3-0 up, I was like, that's me done. But I've watched him, the last few times I've watched him, he's been the standout best player.
He seems to be getting back
team.
To the form he was showing last season when he broke into the England side.
I don't know. I'm not sold on Declan Rice yet. I know for England, but it's not against tough opposition, is it?
What, tonight? No.
Against Arsenal, unbelievably. Right, well, let's get a score prediction. Chris, you can kick us
7-6.
Off. 7-6. 7-6, genuinely.
7-6, yeah.
It's a tiebreaker.
It's a tiebreaker, yeah, unbelievable. Worryingly, the last time, Chris, you done this score prediction, me and you on a Monday night, it was Arsenal, Sheffield United, Arsenal were away, and Dave,
we'd batter them, yeah.
Yeah, I could see him watching, and then Sheffield United scored, and he'd
That's
done
it. I was drunkenly on the phone
yeah,
from Sheffield.
Yeah, then he walked out. He didn't even stay for the second half.
Well, last time Chris and I went to watch a game straight from this, it was Watford at the end of last season.
That was
and I thought
grueling.
That we were so bad, but we won 1-0, and I thought that was the game that was going to take us into the Champions League. How wrong can you be, Chris?
Unbelievable. Yeah, Jim, what are you saying tonight?
Oh, God.
Excited.
This is
Jim.
The bit I don't like. Yeah, I am excited. And I think, you know, my heart says we'll nick a win. And my head says probably a draw.
3-1. 3-1 to the Arsenal. Mm. We've got a really good record against West Ham.
I hope so.
And be quick, more Dave.
Yeah, be more Dave. Yeah, if only you could be more Dave in life. Well, it is City on the weekend. What do you think of that one? Obviously, we don't know how tonight's going to go, but it's a massive game on Sunday, Dave.
Well,
Dave.
I would like to think that we go 4-2-3-1 tonight, and whatever the result, we play proper football. We see the signs of something, and he sticks with it the weekend at home against Man City and goes for it. What choice does he have? So they're not playing well. They really are not playing well for City. They are low on confidence, ridiculously enough. And I think Pep will make quite a few changes.
Yeah, and unbelievably, they can be caught on the counter-attack. They're having defensive problems of their own, Chris.
We've got Standard Liège as well on Thursday, which we've all forgotten about that. But, you know, does he rotate? I think he'll probably rotate quite heavily.
He plays
ahead
the B-team
City.
Against Standard Liège, Lacazette, Luiz, Mustafi.
All of those reserves, those aged reserves. So I fancy us, in terms of Standard Liège, I think we'll still win. Ironically, even though we haven't been doing that lately, I can't see us getting anything against City. Even though they're playing poorly, I just think it's probably a step too far right now. We probably needed to be on a 3-4 game winning run by now for that to be possible.
Jim, Man City, Standard Liège on Thursday.
Standard Liège on Thursday. Well, we've got to not lose by 5-0. Is that right, to qualify?
Yeah.
I think he'll play a
tough,
team.
Tough task.
I think he will play some B team, but he's also got that in the back of his mind that he doesn't want to go all Unai Emery v Barcelona on this one. He's got to get us through because that is such an important thing for us now. So I think we'll do that one. I don't know. Maybe like a narrow win at Liège, and then I think we'll Yeah, I'm with you. Sorry, mate. But I think it's going to be a struggle on Sunday.
Well, Arsenal's score prediction is pretty safe with a 2-2 or a 2-1. Mm. That's what it's been every game for the last 2-2,
don't we? I'm going from 3 wins from 3. We're going to win tonight. We're going to win on Thursday. And we're going to beat City on Sunday.
In a week.
You heard it first here. Then we're going to come back and talk about it on Monday. And I'm saying 3 wins on 3 because I'm not here next week. But the Arsenal Fan Show is here next week and we will see you then.
Thanks for downloading this podcast from Love Sport Radio. For more, go to lovesportradio.com for all the latest podcasts, news and views. Or for more, follow us at Love Sport Radio on Twitter.